We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it? I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
Hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This is episode 93. It's going up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Evoox, YouTube, libertarianinstitute.org in the blog section, and it'll be on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com. I want to remind you about my book, Freedom Through Memedom, the 31-day guide to waking up to liberty. It's available on Amazon. It is available for Kindle, so you can have it downloaded in a couple seconds. Today, I want to welcome back to the show Will Porter. Will is an independent journalist specializing in foreign policy and geopolitics. Will and his friend Kyle Anzalone wrote an article entitled Record Afghan Opium Crops Signal Violent Year for U.S. Forces. It's been published on consortiumnews.com. It was featured on antiwar.com. Will is going to talk about what a record crop for the Taliban means to U.S. forces when it comes to the Taliban's annual spring offensive. We're going to go over a bunch of subjects in a short period of time. So without any further delay, here's Will Porter. Well, thanks for coming back on the show, Will. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you for having me on. How are you?
Oh, doing good. All right. So you and Kyle Anzalone, am I pronouncing his name right?
Yeah, Kyle Anzalone.
Yeah. You have an article that Consortium picked up. Antiwar.com featured it, and I know a lot of people are reading it. Then a couple interviews about it, and basically you guys wrote about 2017 in Afghanistan, specifically I think it's the Kandahar and the Helmand provinces is where most of the poppies are grown there.
Yes.
That they had a record opium crop. Where did like the numbers of what the crop would have been, what the crop turned out to be worth, and just the fact that it's a record opium crop. Where did this information come from? How did this make it into the news?
Yeah, so last year's opium crop, the record breaking crop, which ended up being something like 9,000 tons of opium. This initially, I think, was reported by the UN's Office of Crime. I forget the actual name of the office. The Office of Drugs and Crime Statistics, I think. A UN office. So that's initially where this data comes from. And in this article, we're basically looking at how 2017's opium crop is basically going to furnish the Taliban with a lot of weapons and money for this year. Because obviously they have to, you know, get the opium into the market and stuff, and it takes time to make some money off of it. And so, yeah, generally we're looking at how 2018 is going to be a very rough year for not only the American forces there, but the Afghan station alongside us.
Wow.
Excuse me. Oh, go ahead.
So let me see how I want to phrase this. I know that they normally don't start the winters there are brutal. So they normally do like a spring, if they're going to do something, they do like a spring offensive, right?
Yeah. So pretty much every year you're looking at, in the autumn and the winter, the Taliban kind of like, they don't go completely dormant, but they carry out most of their operations in the spring during what's called the fighting season or the spring offensive. And now this, they don't always do this. I think in the winter of 2016, they actually kept fighting in the Helmand province, but yeah, mostly they do go dormant more or less during the autumn and the winter.
Okay. So from your research, what has stopped in the past? Like in 2016, I mean, been there for 17 years. What has stopped, if the United States government knows that the Taliban is being funded by opium, these poppies, what has stopped them from just going in with flamethrowers and, or, you know, just dropping, you know, whatever kind of insane bombs that they have to just destroy this?
Well, actually in November, they did start actually directly targeting, like poppy fields and drug labs and, refineries and stuff. But this is hard to do because not only is it's not always clear where these refineries and stuff are, but it's not just the Taliban solely running them. You're talking about just regular Afghans. And so, yeah, you could go and carpet bomb all of these, but you're talking about killing a lot of people. Like, there was one strike in November in a Helmand district called Musakala, where they tried to bomb an opium production facility, but they ended up bombing the home of a small-time opium trader. And, yes, they killed him, but they also killed his wife, and they killed, like, 6 children under the age of 8 and a 1-year-old granddaughter. And so these kind of things, as we cite in our piece, these kind of civilian casualties actually drive the insurgency. And so it's not so clear that just simply carpet bombing everything would even be productive.
So they had this record. Has anyone tried to figure out you said 900 tons, right?
Yeah.
What 900 tons would mean to them in a dollar value?
That is not so clear, simply because the values can really fluctuate depending on what market they're sold in. Now, the Pentagon has been giving, like I said, they started bombing drug production facilities in November. They've been giving, they've been speculating sort of the value of the drug product destroyed. But as you'll also see, we cite in a piece an expert who talks about over at Alternet, that's where she initially was quoted. This expert talks about how it's very unclear that these monetary amounts are even reliable, because simply it's hard to calculate the figure.
This opium that they produce, is any of it, I mean, I would assume street heroin around the globe, you know, it goes towards heroin around the globe that, you know, people would buy in the United States, you know, illegally. Is any of this making its way into pharmaceutical companies?
That's not exactly clear where if Afghan opium is coming to the pharmaceutical companies. Mostly when we're looking at illicit heroin in the United States and our opioid crisis, we're more talking about opiates and poppies that are grown in Latin America. And so when we're talking about Afghanistan's opium, a lot of that is actually consumed locally, like in Afghanistan itself, in Iran and Pakistan. Some of it makes it into Europe. But as of the last couple decades, not a lot of that opium is going to the United States. Now, in the 90s, Afghan opium did account for 75% of the global opium market, but since that's sort of shrunk, and now it's more consumed locally.
From what I understand, and I think you might have mentioned this in your article, in 2001, 2002, the Taliban, there really wasn't much of it. Was there much of an opium trade going on at the beginning of the Afghanistan conflict?
Yeah, so this is something I think gets a lot of people caught up or confused. And so in the year 2000, yes, the Taliban did actually impose a prohibition on poppy cultivation. And so a lot of people then think that the Taliban is actually against the production of the cultivation of opium or poppies. However, if you just look at the 3 years prior, from when they took power in Kabul in Afghanistan in 1996 to the year 1999, the Taliban absolutely encouraged opium production. They made a lot of money off of taxing the trade. 2000 is actually more of an outlier, and they prohibited poppies more as a sop to the international community. At the time in the year 2000, Afghanistan was going through a terrible drought, and they were looking for international aid from either foreign countries or international bodies. And so sort of their prohibition of poppies looks a lot more like they're trying to get acceptance from the international community. And actually, the United States, they actually did secure $43 million in aid from the U.S. after they banned poppies. And this is in May of 2001. This is just before we invaded. And so it's kind of interesting. The year 2000 is definitely an outlier with the prohibition of poppies. But no, there really has been a growing trade in Afghanistan ever since the late 70s.
Right around the time of the Russian invasion?
Yeah, exactly. During that time, actually, poppy cultivation went up by 20-fold. In Afghanistan.
Well, they would have had to pay. They were paying for the war against the invaders.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So that's another thing we see is poppy cultivation starts to grow again in late 2001 and 2002 because there's a force in there that's they see as an invader.
Exactly, the American invasion.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this dip in production, I think in the year 2000, it went down to 180 tons. But within 1 year, by year 2001, it went back up to like 3,000 tons. And so we can see how just like it's really conflict that drives a lot of the cultivation of poppies.
Yeah, if they need to pay for something, they'll start growing again and start going. Well, also if there was a drought in 2000, I mean, wouldn't that have that would have affected being able to grow as well, I would assume.
Yeah, exactly. And part of that drought too, like part of the ban was like sort of the Taliban saying like, come on people, like grow something else other than poppies. We're having a drought here. But also, like I said, they're looking for some kind of appeasement of the international community. And now that ban that they imposed actually ended up hurting them a lot because it destroyed their support in the countryside where millions of people are relying on poppy cultivation for their livelihoods. And it destroyed their tax revenue, too. And so really, like, yeah, the poppy ban worked to get them some international aid, but it immediately screwed them. It basically was a suicidal move.
So in... when Obama started the surge in Afghanistan, I think it was topped out, was about 100 to 120,000 troops in Afghanistan?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Right now, it's at, what, about 12 or 14?
Yeah, I think 14,000 is the estimate.
Correct me if I'm wrong, it looks like Trump wants to go on the offensive this year. And he will send additional troops. The amount is probably unclear. They probably wouldn't want to telegraph that. But it looks like they're going, if the Taliban is gearing up for its spring offensive, it looks like, is Trump getting ready to meet them?
Yeah, yes, exactly. And so as you mentioned, part of Trump's new Afghan strategy, part of it too is to be opaque, as you said, to not telegraph the specific numbers and stuff. But yeah, the strategy is generally to embed more American advisors with their Afghan counterparts, but closer to the front lines. And so earlier on, you mentioned the Kandahar and the Helmand provinces in the south of Afghanistan. These are sort of along like the tribal border area with Pakistan. And that is the Taliban's stronghold. That's really where they have like a sanctuary and where they control the most territory without being contested. And so yeah, American forces are going to be closer than ever to the Taliban in these front lines. The Taliban is going to have more money than ever from the narcotics trade. And the Taliban, of course, controls more territory than they ever have. And so these things are all kind of coming together this spring, this fighting season. And that's sort of what our piece is about.
Wow. So let me ask you a question, and then we'll go back to it. There are pictures online, and we don't know if they're photoshopped, what they are, but I've seen pictures online of American troops walking through poppy fields, and it almost appears as if they're guarding them. Do you know, I mean, what information do you have about that?
Yeah, so these are, I don't believe, I mean, maybe some of them are photoshopped, but no, certainly there are real pictures of Americans patrolling poppy fields in Afghanistan. And this is sort of, there needs to be a distinction to make here, because there are poppy fields that are grown, or that are basically controlled and taxed by the Taliban, and there are poppy fields that are grown and controlled and taxed by other warlords. And sort of as the United States, one of our major strategies when we first invaded Afghanistan was to sort of back a bunch of ethnic groups of, a bunch of warlords, a bunch of Uzbek and Tajik and Hazara ethnic group warlords, and they also have poppy fields. And so when we see these photos of Americans patrolling and protecting poppy fields, that's really protecting the livelihood of our warlord allies in the region. And so it shouldn't be confused with protecting the Taliban's opium and their poppies. The Taliban are doing that against, you know, the American military's will. But yes, we do certainly get into bed with certain warlords who not only do things like deal heroin and grow opium, but there's a widespread practice of, for example, them abusing young boys. And so there's a lot of things that we have to sort of tolerate when we get in bed with these allies.
Yeah, I've read some articles on that. It's extremely, extremely disturbing. Very hard to read. So, okay, going back to the spring offensive, what we have to look forward to this year. If they're flush with cash, and they can get, and I assume they can get supplies from anywhere. I mean, at this point, the United States has made so many enemies that they can there be tons of people willing to, you know, turn a profit and sell them some weapons. What are we looking at here? Are we looking at another buildup? Are we looking at a full on offensive again?
Yeah, it's not exactly clear what the Taliban has in mind, but what we do know for a fact is they're going to have more money in their hands than they've had in the last decade to, you know, use for toward operations. And so in 2008, for example, I think the Taliban earned, like, so 10 years ago, they earned something like $425 million off the narcotics trade. And the narcotics trade this year, the opium crop, is far bigger than it was in 2008. And so this data is sort of sparse and hard to come by. However, we can only imagine that it's going to be far more. It's going to be, you know, over $500 million this year. And so just think of what kind of operations you could finance with that. You know, what kind of rockets and weapons and fighters you could finance with $500 million.
Who are the Taliban's immediate enemies in country, their own countrymen?
Well, primarily they're fighting against the government that's based in Kabul and the various security services of that government. And sort of that's the United States, that's our primary objective, is basically to prop up that central government in Kabul. Of course, with the Taliban, it's a lot easier to support a guerrilla organization that can melt back into the society and cross over the border with Pakistan. It's a lot harder to support a central government in a country that's never really had a central government. And so that's the American objective right now. And that would be the Taliban's primary enemy, I think, is the central government in Kabul.
Who does the, historically in Afghanistan, who's running the central government right now? I mean, obviously the United States is running the central government right now, but who are the Afghanis, and what tribe would they, you know, what groups would they most be in line with historically?
Yeah, the majority of the population in Afghanistan are Pashto or Pashtun. And this is a particular ethnicity and linguistic group. And there are many other ethnicities, as I mentioned, Hazaras and Uzbeks and Tajiks. And it's a very diverse region. But effectively, yeah, it's the majority Pashtos are being, effectively the American government is backing the minority Uzbeks and Tajiks and Hazaras against the majority Pashtos. And it's not the case that all Pashtuns are part of the Taliban, but sort of that the Taliban is a Pashtun organization and kind of represents them. And so there's sort of associations there.
Yeah, I've read that there are Pashtun like villages that never for thousands of years had never seen an outsider, like somebody from outside of Afghanistan before, you know, the United States came there, and they speak their own language. They speak their own languages. These just, you know, these little villages and valleys in places. And, you know, I people ask about Afghanistan, and they're like, well, what, you know, what's wrong with them? It's like, well, it sounds like they would, for the most part, leave people alone. That they seem very isolationist if people didn't keep coming there and messing with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, Pashtuns sort of define themselves as like the resistors of invasion. You know, they've resisted everyone from Alexander the Great to the British a couple times, to the Russians, and now the Americans. And yeah, there are some Afghan villages that are so isolated that when they first saw Americans, they thought they were the Russians. Like, they thought it was still the Russians from the late 70s and 80s. And they hadn't even heard about 9/11. They were not even aware of this. And so it's kind of ironic that we're still there fighting this local ethnic population, who some of them don't even know why we're there. They don't even know what September 11th is.
And it would be almost impossible to communicate with them. I mean, considering some of them, their dialect is so local that to find somebody who could translate, you might not even be able to find. You might be able to find someone who can translate, sort of, but you know, you may not be able to find someone who can translate directly.
Right. I mean, it's a lot to explain, too. You got to basically explain the last, like, you know, 50 years of history to people.
What do they call Afghanistan? The place where dynasties go to die? Or
The graveyard of empires.
Yeah, the graveyard of empires. Yeah, it's everyone who's tried it. It's, I guess you don't want to learn from history, or some people are getting very wealthy by United States troops being there.
Certainly. Contract.
Really, yeah, it's really the only thing I can think of. So going back to the article, where else, like I said, I read the article this afternoon. Where is this? I mean, the amount of opium that's being manufactured there. Well, it's being grown there. And I know, is it actually processed there?
Yes, some amount of it is. And yeah, I guess we should make the distinction too. Poppies are like the plant that you grow, and opium is like the sap that you drain from them. And then you can take opium and mess with it and turn that into heroin or morphine or any other kind of opioid. Now, yes, some of the opium is indeed manufactured and processed in the actual country, in Afghanistan. And so that's some of the facilities that the U.S. has been bombing lately are like refineries and drug laboratories. So not just like farms.
Okay, so I assume that this crop last year, if it's such a big deal, then it was a lot. It was a lot more than the than the previous year. How would the Pentagon, how would special investigations, how would they look at this? How would they, what's the scuttlebutt about this when they hear something like this, when they hear that much production and that much money could flow in?
Well, they certainly know that it translates immediately into more money and weapons for the Taliban. And so I think General John Nicholson, he's like the main commander of American forces in Afghanistan. He talked about how the Taliban derives like 60% of their yearly revenue just from what's produced in the Helmand province. And so, you know, whether we can take him at his word with that data, with that figure, that still sounds pretty significant. And so when they see this kind of this opium crop, this record breaking bumper crop, they're certainly thinking in terms of this is going to immediately bolster the Taliban.
So that's why, even though they're trying to keep it under wraps, exactly what they want to do, they are definitely geared. It does seem like Trump is, well, is it even Trump? I mean, he's got three Marine Corps generals surrounding him. Like they have something that's going to be something planned for the, to meet the spring offensive.
Yeah, like they're presenting it sort of as like a new strategy, but there's really not much new about it. I mean, I talked to a guy named Andrew Basevich, who some of your listeners might be familiar
with. I'm familiar with him.
He mentioned how, you know, the Trump administration is presenting this as a sort of reworking of the strategy, but Andrew Basevich sees no difference in basically this strategy. It's just less. You had already mentioned how Obama's surge put our troop levels at over 100,000. And now we're trying to do some kind of mini surge with 14,000 troops. And so it's unclear how this is going to accomplish any more than what Obama did. And I mean, they've been trying to combat the opium growth too. It's not like through things other than direct bombing. So in 2016, for example, Barack Obama sent a couple hundred Marine advisors to the Helmand province with the goal of trying to take back some of this territory because it produces so much opium. And within a month, the Afghan soldiers who were our advisors were sent to back up, they had already retreated. Within 4 weeks, they retreated and gave two more districts to the Taliban. And so this kind of just shows you like the track record of our attempts to combat the opium here.
Now, with the bombings of trying to take out some of the processing labs in recent months, is there any evidence yet of, I know it's winter and I know they like to chill in winter, no pun intended. Is there any evidence that these, you know, it looks like we might be dealing with some blowback for, like you said, someone's basically a small time processor's whole family got taken out. Is there any evidence that this is causing, that this is being used as motivation to, make this year's spring offensive special?
Well, we do know for a fact that, studies have concluded more than one, and we cite this in our piece at Consortium News, that the more civilians that we end up killing in our operations, that this definitely feeds the insurgency. And so whatever it's doing, it certainly cannot help. Now, do we know specifically how many new fighters are going to be created by the killing of these certain civilians? I don't think we can say specifically. But it has been found that, like, you could reduce the number of Taliban or insurgent attacks if we could reduce the number of civilian casualties that we inflict.
When you say insurgency, specifically, who are you referring to?
It's basically the Taliban and anybody who's associated or allied with them. There's a lot of different militant and militia groups in Afghanistan. And so you even have now what they're calling ISIS-K, or the ISIS Khorasan province, which is, that's a whole other story of itself, but like this would be another example of a militant group. And really the ISIS-K is just a break off of the Tariqi Taliban, of the Pakistani Taliban. But it's sort of a complicated picture. There's many different groups in Afghanistan.
Is there any way that some of these groups would get together and team up with the Taliban to, if there is a particularly strong offensive this year coming from our direction, that a bunch of these groups might get together to might forget about their differences to fight against it?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think you see this happen with other types of terrorist groups, too, across the region, across not only Central Asia, but the Middle East and North Africa, too. That it seems to be whatever franchise is sort of getting the most attention and doing the best, they tend to get a lot of other smaller splinter groups saying, oh, yeah, like, we're under their flag now, too. And so who knows? If the Taliban are particularly, if they're doing very well this fighting season, then, yeah, we could expect maybe other independent groups to sort of associate themselves with them.
You know, it's funny when you said insurgency, I immediately thought of the United States. And when you said terror, when you said all these terrorist groups, I immediately thought, I wonder how, some of these people look upon the United States military and the forces that they bring with them. And I would think that, quite possibly they may look upon, them as the terror, the people who live there would look upon them as the insurgency and them as the terrorists. But
I should probably be more careful too when I say this, because like the Taliban, like I guess they've carried out terrorist acts, but they're not like they're not like Al Qaeda. They're not an international terrorist organization. They're like a local group, and they're only an insurgency in the context of our occupation of their country. And so I guess we should, you could parse those terms a little more carefully.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm thinking of, China decided to come here and do some stuff, would we be the insurgency?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But, okay. So is there anything else, any other, high points from the article that we've missed?
No, I think the basic idea here is that the 2017's record opium crop is really going to leave the Taliban with a lot of money and a lot of fighters and a lot of weapons good to go for this fighting season. And on top of that, you also have the Trump strategy that's going to put more Americans in harm's way. And so this really is all kind of coming to loggerheads at this coming fighting season.
All right, man. Well, that's good information. Like I said, I read the article. I learned a lot. I was... Unfortunately, it didn't make me feel good about, what we can be seeing this year. And another thing I can think is, if there is a huge offensive there, are we going to get any of the truth? I mean, if it turns out to be a complete cluster, clusterfuck, are we going to get the truth? How is it going to be reported here? Because it damn sure sounds like they're gearing up for something, and, It sounds like the old United States might be walking into something that could really get some people hurt and some people killed, and not only Americans, but we know that anytime something like this happens over there, innocent bystanders are just gonna be mowed down and they'll be destroyed.
Yeah, I'm sorry to kind of be the bearer of bad news here, but yeah, this does not look good at all. I mean, we've been here for going on 17 years. And things are looking as bad as they've ever been this year. And so, and given the track record of not doing well there, yet we persist, we keep escalating and escalating. I highly doubt that any failures in this coming spring offensive are going to be, that the media is going to learn any lessons from this,
Yeah. Well, the article is called Record Afghan Opium Crop Signals Violent Year for U.S. Forces by Will Porter and Kyle Anzalone. It's on consortiumnews.com. And Consortium's been around since 1995. I mean, this is uh, This is a site that most people should bookmark and go to on a fairly regular basis so that you can get updated on, you know, it's just like AnnieWard.com, just like Libertarian Institute. You'll be updated on things that are not being reported in the mainstream media. And if they are being reported, you're going to get much more in-depth coverage. Like, I don't see, have you seen the, where is the mainstream media reported on this record Afghan crop and sought to make a big deal of it?
Yeah, you may have seen it at like the Reuters Newswire or something, but they will not make any of the kind of analysis that I was giving you at the consortium piece, that Kyle and I are giving you at the consortium piece.
Yeah, and you're not going to hear about that on MSNBC, CNN. Definitely not going to hear about it on Fox News. So, yeah, sites like Consortium, antiwar.com, Libertarian Institute, a bunch of other sites that I'm sure you can name. This is where you learn what's going on in the world. This is where a sane person quickly becomes anti-war.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they see that it's hard to look at what's going on and honestly believe that these quote unquote wars are meant to be won. They just seem to be going on and on and on. So thank you for doing this journey. I want to thank Kyle for doing this kind of journalism where you talk about things that are going to be glossed over in the mainstream and then really look at what it means, you know, how it's going to be applied in the real world and just how friggin' awful it's going to be. How awful it is going to be and how much of a harbinger of woe, you know, news like this is.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you. We really, you know, I think everybody, anytime you guys put out articles like this, it's an education. And I just hope it brings people closer and closer to our belief that these wars are, They're not helping anybody. On the contrary, they're hurting us and they're hurting the people who are over there. So, you know, thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me on. I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, no problem. And have a good weekend. We'll have you on again soon when unfortunately something, you know, possibly when the spring offensive gets underway and we start seeing the fruit of your reporting here.
Yeah, I'll be happy to come on and tell you guys I told you so.
All right, man. You have a good evening. Have a good weekend.
You too.
I want to thank you for tuning in to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast today. I want to thank Will for coming on. I want to remind you about my book, Freedom Through Memedom, 31-Day Guide to Waking Up to Liberty. It's on Amazon. Check it out. I'll be back with another podcast on the weekend, so have a great week. Take care. Bye.